Welcome to the Zimcast, a program dedicated to bringing you what's new in agricultural marketing. The Zimcast is the official podcast of AgWired and hosted by Chuck and Cindy Zimmerman.
Hello and welcome to the Zimcast. I'm Chuck Zimmerman. I'd like to thank the sponsor for our program, and that's Growmark, locally owned, globally strong. In this program, we are going to learn about a growing phenomenon in the IPO world, and that's the number of animal health companies that are pursuing public offerings. I had a chance to visit with Stan Baker and Jim Ash with Hush Blackwell. And so in our conversation, we're going to learn a little bit about what's going on in this space and what it all means. First of all, guys, why don't you tell me a little bit about your business for those who aren't familiar with the company?
Sure, thanks. We are a national law firm with a significant practice in the food and agribusiness industry space. A subpart of that, headed by Stan Baker, who is also an attorney and doctor of veterinary medicine, and some of the other folks in our group, focuses specifically on animal health and welfare, both in the companion animal space and in the the production animal space. We have about 50 attorneys that focus in that area, and as I think we're going to talk about here in a minute, one of the things that we are seeing as a pretty significant trend is the growth from an independent monetization standpoint, meaning getting to the market, being bought and sold, or going public, businesses that provide significant health, pharmaceutical, or food additive benefits for the animal space.
Wonderful. Well, that's what caught my attention. We focus a lot on that here at AgWired. And so when we look at this IPO category that in the animal health area, this is, as I understand it, a growing phenomenon. Give us a little historical perspective about where we've been and then to where we are today.
Well, let me start, and then I'm going to ask Stan to kind of kick in. So one thing that we all have seen over the last several years is a continuing trend in the amount of money that people, not just in the U.S., but across the world, and a growing number of dollars spent in some of the more developing nations around companion animal and companion animal health. You know, so in the last several years, we've seen the development of health insurance for pets. We've seen significant increase in costs for veterinary care, for specialty feeds, for the kinds of higher margin, more costly sort of products focused on the animals and their health. So as you see that grow, more and more money comes into the space, then businesses get bigger and bigger. And I think what we have seen in the last few years is some of the very large companies worldwide that were generally in the animal health space have found that the smaller segments of their business that deal specifically with pharmaceutical solutions, if you will, to animal health issues, have been growing and need to stand alone and get a higher multiple in the market because they do stand alone. So let me ask Stan to weigh in.
Yeah, the concept of a publicly traded animal health company is actually relatively new. 18 months ago, there were none. There was just simply no publicly traded animal health companies in the U.S. At that time, most of the animal health companies that people think of or thought of at the time were subdivisions of large human pharma companies. So, for example, Pfizer had their animal health division, as does Bayer, Merck, Merial, Eli Lilly. But 18 months ago, in January, February of 2013, Pfizer decided to spin off their animal health unit as a standalone company, and that created what is now known as Zoetis. That particular spinoff was greatly anticipated in the industry because up until then, all the animal health data, most of the industry data, there just wasn't any. Most of the animal health divisions were small enough to where they didn't have to break down a lot of their financial data. So when that happened, there was a lot of interest in seeing exactly what Zoetis would file with the SEC. And another thing that happened was that everybody in the animal health industry, and those, and particularly those outside of the industry as well, I might add, saw that spinoff as a good thing. The Zoetis stock kind of spiked at the beginning. It's settled down now. But a lot of companies, startup companies, mid-sized companies, said, well, hey, if Zoetis can get can have a successful IPO, perhaps we can too. And that started sort of a chain reaction, and now there's been five. Aratana was the first one after Zoetis. It was a what you would consider a startup company based here in Kansas City. They issued last summer, followed by Kindred Biopharma in December. Phibro then did a minority share offering earlier this spring, and then Parnell, an Australian company, issued 3 weeks ago. I know of at least two more that are in the pipeline, so there's a lot of activity right now with people trying to obtain capital to expand operations, expand products, IPO being quite popular at the moment.
So you would look to that IPO that created Zoetis as kind of like a game changer that sort of set the stage then for more companies to look at this and have something like I think you're referring to, you have some data, some information that investors can look at to make some good decisions on then.
Correct. Yeah. You know, public companies, there needs to be an infrastructure in the market for companies to be able to be public in their industry. There needs to be analysts that follow the industry and can provide comparative information about the businesses. There need to be underwriters who understand the market for these and the buyers. There need to be investors who are excited about being in that industry segment. There need to be law firms who understand the unique regulatory aspects of these businesses to provide the right disclosures and guidance to the companies. And somebody had to start it. And once it got started, I think what we see is the momentum building in what is basically a new industry within the availability of public investment.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the changes that's causing this kind of wave, if you will, of new public offerings?
Probably the first thing that comes to mind is that it is a way to get capital to expand both ongoing operations and to bring in new products. Right now, there is a bit of a lack. Well, it depends on who you talk to, but business development people within established animal health companies often say that there's a bit of a lack of innovation right now with respect to new products coming out. So a lot of people are taking a hard look at a lot of the startup companies, early development technologies, things that are in the, they're probably beyond the research stage, but they're just entering the development and commercialization stage. IPOs provide funding to snap up some of that technology early on. Aratana has had several notices over the past few months about technologies that they are bringing into their fold. Another reason for IPO right now is that some people feel that the private equity market is a little bit tight with respect to animal health. As Jim mentioned, there's not a long history of, there's not an institutional knowledge of animal health in the investment community. There's quite a bit of money and investment knowledge in related to human health, but that does not necessarily translate well over to the animal health market. So trying to find a private equity group to invest in animal health, you know, might not be as easy as it would be in human health. Therefore, IPO is seen as an alternative path to obtaining capital.
How about the market today for animal health products of this nature? Since I understand that your company's been involved in a couple of animal health IPOs, you must have some sense of how the business is going, and if this is attracting investors into the IPO side, then that suggests things must be going pretty well.
Well, I would suggest that the animal health space is a potential growth market, both in terms of selling products and in terms of investment opportunities. The growth, the spending of in animal health is sort of on a steady, quite steady rise over the past few years. There's more disposable income, people having less children, more pets, industrialized, there's more people are coming into the middle class across the globe. So there's more disposable income to spend on animals. Another thing that, another issue in that a lot of people kind of overlook is the food production side of animal health. Our population is growing, some people say exponentially, and I think that's probably a proper term. Elanco has a very good presentation on the population growth of the world and the food problems that is going to generate in the not-too-distant future. So there's a lot of interest, particularly in Asia, regarding animal health technologies related to food production. So the, across the board, both companion and food animal, there are needs that have to be met, and no one is forecasting a downturn in the animal health market anytime soon.
Yeah, that kind of answered another question I was going to ask. So when it comes to these companies looking at options, which might include an IPO to create new capital for growth or what have you, you know, obviously your firm's involved in that. I'm assuming that there are some sort of special legal considerations and things, obviously on the regulatory side, that companies like you can really offer to help guide somebody through this kind of process.
Yes, sir. I'll give you one quick example of that. Because there was no institutional knowledge of animal health in the investment space, what we have seen in some of the regulatory documents, SEC regulatory document that we've both helped draft and reviewed, there's a tendency among the investment establishment to use well-known, very well-respected human health service providers, whether that's accountants or lawyers or what have you. And there's a tendency to just sort of say, well, it's all medicine, it's all health. Human health is analogous to animal health. We'll just, you know, pick up this human health team and apply it to an animal health project. And that's unfortunately a bad assumption. For example, the Food and Drug Administration, while their regulatory scheme for human pharma and animal pharma are analogous, there's some very important differences. And sometimes those differences are, you know, not that obvious. And unless you have some, unless your service providers have experience in the animal health space, that can lead to some issues down the road that have to be corrected, hopefully caught and corrected. If not, you have to deal with them as they pop up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I assume having a DVM on your team there adds a good perspective in terms of working on these types of projects.
Yeah, this is Jim. I'll weigh in on that because Stan is
humble and doesn't want to talk about himself. But the perspective of someone who understands not just the legal issues, but has a very good understanding of the science and of the industry is invaluable when you're talking about a company that is thinking about how to describe and position its products and what its ultimate customer base is. So some of these are consumer focused. I get that. Some of them are industry focused. In other words, pharmaceuticals get pushed down through providers of healthcare. And so the ability to communicate to the full market from a perspective of a prescribing veterinarian, for instance, is pretty unique and pretty helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Animal health, unlike human health, is still a cash business, more or less. The insurance is, it's a blip on the radar screen right now. It's growing, but it's not all that important in the industry. So the analysis that an investor must make of an animal health deal is very, very, very different than a human health deal, and even more so if it's food animal.
Well, before we close, anything else you would like folks to know about not only what Hush Blackwell can offer in this area, but other considerations, regardless of which side we're talking here, in the potential investor or the company looking to take this step?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to give a little commercial. So I will say that I think we are uniquely positioned with the team that we have that covers a team of very experienced SEC IPO attorneys, as well as several patent attorneys that can understand the technology, including Stan and his veterinary background. So I think we bring a holistic approach to it that issuers and underwriters would be well served by. But the other thing I think that people should just keep in mind is I was asked a week or two ago by a publication in the sort of global M&A space what areas to watch, and I listed three, and on the top of my list was watch the investment, both soon I think to follow private equity, but also now people going to the market in this particular space. It is fairly recession proof. No one, as Stan said, is predicting this to go down over the years, and the growing middle class in various countries around the world will drive both companion animal spending and a continued huge demand for animal protein.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you mentioned Elanco earlier, and I'm familiar with their white papers they've actually written on this topic. And I don't think, like you said, I don't think anybody doubts with the growing population that we're not going to see just increased need on both sides, companion as well as food animals. So I'd like to thank both of you very much, Stan Baker and Jim Ash with Hush Blackwell. We've just been talking about the new phenomenon in the IPO world in the animal health area. We're going to keep up to date with what's going on in this growing phenomenon here of IPOs in the animal health world. And you can stay up to date with us at animal.agwire.com. That's the Zimcast for this week. I hope you've enjoyed it, and thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the Zimcast, the official podcast of AgWired. Check us out at www.agwired.com to find out what's new in agricultural marketing.